This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and an engaging conversation today with a colorful character, Jake Luttrell of Bakersfield, California, celebrating his 92nd birthday this weekend with a couple grandchildren, 10 great-grandchildren, and 5 great-great-grandchildren. A whole lot of people who wouldn't be here if Jake didn't make it home from World War II and his duty using his welding skills to repair aircraft and improvise fixes like the rear landing gear on attack gliders. He spent time in England, France, Holland, Belgium, among others. And when we left off, he was remembering a close call after the end of hostilities when he was preparing to come home to his wife Doris and their son, who'd been just 3 weeks old when Jake shipped out. You told us that you went into the Rhone River with a few of your friends thinking you were going to cross it, but the current swept you away. You found yourself alone floating in the river, and it sounded like you were losing hope. You said you closed your eyes and just quit. Those were your words. You just quit. I guess there must have been somebody who didn't quit on you. How'd you escape that seemingly hopeless scenario?
I don't know how long or anything, but I just remember that I more or less woke up, and I was over against the bank laying in mud and sand and water, and it was a little inlet in there where the water wasn't running. And I thought, well, how in the thunder did I get here or what? Well, I don't know. Someone was helping me. I know I was breathing so hard that I hurt my ribs. Yeah, it was hard. I tried swimming. I couldn't. So I crawled out of there. Here I had my dog tags and my GI shorts. And there was a guy laying over there on a blanket with some gals, and I tried to talk to them, but they couldn't get no word. So I just started walking down shoreline, little old town down there, and I could see the top of a bridge, and I think, oh, well, I got it made. I got down there, and the bank was up about 100 feet high, but there's a little old rock path down there to it, and here were two guys with old boats. Well, the reason I saw that hard was a bridge. Turned out that was the middle section, and it was still there from there over to the other side. But on my side, it was blown away. So I got down there to those guys, and I tried to explain to them by hand in a word or two. I need to get over there. I'll pay you. They jumped in that old flat-bottom boat, got them 3 oars in case they broke one, the way we went. But when we got far enough that I could holler at these guys and get a response, I said, man, get your hand in your pockets, fill it full of money. I promised these guys they're going to get paid big, big money. Well, they were pulling it out, and these two old boys, I could see them yet. They just nearly went ape, and the guys started wading out before we even got to the dirt and was handing them guys money, and they had some kind of an old sack around their neck that hung down, and they was cramming and filling that thing with money. Well, I didn't care if they give them $500,000. It was money we couldn't use as French money. All I knew was I was getting back to the other side.
Did you guys get in any trouble after that?
Matter of fact, he said, I'm not going to put your name in the paper, Jake, but he said, I'm just glad that you made it back.
Working in these air installations in Europe, were there ever times where you guys came under attack, where you were a target because of the work you were carrying out? What do you remember about that?
Well, you know, England actually was attacked much more than what the average person knew. A lot of it was bombing, but not with necessarily big bombs, which they did, but they had anti-personnel, 50-pound bombs. Well, they went out and took concrete blocks, you might say, about 3 feet long, and zigzagged them, and then another one that paralleled them, maybe like 10 or 12. Well, when they started coming over, they yelled, better get in. We'd grab a bite to eat and run out there and get down and crawl, and these bombs was hitting all over. But the only way they could get you, they had to hit you direct.
What does that feel like, though, to know that bombs are coming in and you're over here hunkered down behind some concrete hoping it doesn't land on you?
Well, I'll tell you the truth, man. It's hard to try to recall how you felt. You'd been scared so many times that it was just another experience from then that point to endure it until they waved the flag and we quit. I will never forget this one time in Holland. It was raining, and we dug holes and cut brush and so forth and piled over it because we didn't have tents or anything. That night was miserable. We were just laying in a hole of water. I'll never forget, I woke up that next morning and looked out there and that old American flag. Of course, no one had took it down, but it was just, the wind was blowing and a sagging and that water pouring out. Nothing in the world, not even a 20-year-old blonde looked that good. That old flag was worth all the money in the world. And as it turned out, we felt like that's the way it was. Oh, I could go on for 3 days telling you about experiences and things similar to this. Like, I don't know if I ever told you about the little boy there in Holland. And I think I had talked to his dad or his grandpa, maybe it was 2 or 3 days before that. But he was working in the garden. He was about a quarter of a mile or so from where I was at. And I heard these explosions, but they weren't big, so that wasn't nothing. I went down that way, and I could see this youngster laying there. Well, he had picked up, it'd be about the equivalent of a hand grenade, big hand grenade. Just couldn't stand the thought of not playing with it or whatever. And he pulled a ring on that thing, and it blew him half into his insides. Well, I didn't know what to do, really, but I picked him up, and I carried him. And to this day, I don't know if it was his dad or his granddad. But anyway, he was very, very nice about it. I helped him get him into a shed there where he had a little bunk and bed. And he tried, to express himself, but he couldn't. And I didn't say. But, I mean, this kind of a thing, what are you going to do? It happens. Sometimes it's worse.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of things like that that you saw that you wish you could unsee. When you think back about it all now, the time that you spent in the service, and the fact that you were able to come home and see that little boy and then have another one, what are you most proud of in being a World War II veteran and all the things that you were involved in? What gives you a sense of pride now?
Well, just to be perfectly honest about it, I don't honestly think I could remember of giving myself credit for what happened or what we got done. It was more that we just had a job to do, and if we finished and got out of there, we were fortunate. Probably most all the guys had more serious thoughts about it maybe after they were home, maybe for 10 years, than they did at any point in time when they were just over there.
Was there a particular kind of airplane that you enjoyed working on?
Well, I was kind of a old B-17, and of course the old 47. It was like a Model A Ford. You couldn't keep it down. It was simple. It sure wasn't comfortable to ride in. We rode to Holland out of England, and on the way we were attacked by German planes, small ones. The co-pilot come back there, and he said, "Sarge, you can do whatever, but we're going to have to get down. We're going to have to get away from these guys. There's some parachutes laying over there, and they've been laying there 2 years. I said, "Well, I doubt if we would try them." I said, "Why don't you just drop the thing? It looked like pasture and all down there." Well, he did, but you could look. I remember you could look out them little old round holes, and they were boom, them black smoke were saying to each other, "I hope the thunder he gets this thing down there." Well, he did, and it was an ex-German bomber base, so to speak, that had got blown out and round and done away with. For 3 days, we were on a diet of sardines. Yeah, but like I say, crazy things, that no matter where you is at. They come over one day, a guy that was given the risky job of being in charge of everybody. Well, it probably was a total of about 300 or 400 people. Said, "There's a guy down there in that barn, and every time anyone comes by there, he tries to blow them up." So it was about 10 of us went down there and circled that barn. We stayed out a pretty good distance. And he finally shot one guy in the foot. I said, "Well, we're either going to leave him to the buzzards or do away with him." So we waited till it got kind of halfway dark. And we got down there and crawled around till we got in this barn. And we had a flashlight. He had nothing. We located him, so we put him away and took him up to the guy that had given us the go-ahead. But, it just seemed like it was an ongoing thing of that kind of stuff, especially when you changed and went to a new location.
What was it like to come home and see your wife and that little boy who you hadn't seen in a while?
Probably the one greatest feeling that I ever had in my life. What was he? A general, Hap Arnold. He was our closest big name. He sent me a letter, and the wife and I sat there and read it and thought about it. And he said, if you'll re-enlist for 6 months, I believe it was, he'd reinstate me as a senior master sergeant, and I could have 8 or 9 location choices to serve. And I thought, oh boy, here we go. But no, I said, it wasn't great enough to leave the family, so I refused it.
Well, tell me about that moment when you saw your son again, because I'm thinking, if I were you, I'd be wondering, is this kid going to know who I am?
He didn't know who I was. Well, let's see, he would have been, what, 3 years old? Now, it wasn't long, because he was an outgoing individual, redheaded, temper, but we made out great. It wasn't very long until he was well aware of who he was and who I was. But it was, of course, in a sense, harder for me to get used to than it was him.
I'm just imagining that was probably a pretty emotional moment for you, because there were probably some times where you wondered if you'd ever see him again, right?
Oh, yes, no question about that. All of my family, all of them were still alive, including my mother and father, but then they didn't last all that long. And all of my brothers and sisters were still living. So I had a lot to come home to. There comes a time when you get my age now, am I going to be here tomorrow?
Well, but I know just here in recent memories, you had quite an adventure with Honor Flight Kern County. What was that like for you to go back to Washington and see that World War II memorial?
The only thing that could have made it any better, actually, if I'd have been, let's say, it's even 10 years younger, my man that was in charge with me, he's young and strong, and which it would have been great if I'd have been younger, because I'd have been able to physically do what I couldn't do.
What did you see there, though, that was meaningful to you?
Well, I had been there before and seen a certain amount of it, the wife and I had. I'm looking at pictures there today of when she and I had been there. But what we seen mostly was different.
Well, they didn't have the World War II memorial yet then. So when you got to that particular memorial with all the gold stars on the wall and everything else there, what did it mean to you? What did you think about while you were there?
You want me to really tell you?
Yeah.
Should have done it a long time ago. Now they're taking the boys to Vietnam. They shouldn't have had to have waited like they have. But at least now they are being recognized.
What did you get out of that? Of the whole experience, what did it do for you? What made it worth it for you?
First of all, it was just a joy, really. It wasn't like being there during the war, when that was what you was there for, was helping create or discourage a war. You just had to really enjoy it and appreciate what had been done to make that possible. In fact, if I wasn't at my age, I'd look forward to going again. Now, I pushed on guys to go that wasn't going to go. But the fact that I had been there and back, I said, hey, believe me, first of all, you know I wouldn't lie to you, and I'm not overdoing it. I'm just telling you, make up your mind to go and relax. Take your medication. Take everything that will help you, you know, do better. And I say you will enjoy it. Well, every one of them did. Even Vernon Mirrors, that can't see and he can't hear. And, yeah. And he said, Jake, he said, that was wonderful. Well, again, his big 250-pound boy pushed him all over.
To be there, to meet all the people along the way, to come back home and have people waiting for you and cheering you on, did it make you feel like what you did meant something?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I think you could say it brought more meaning to it, because when we started back, it was like, well, the ball game's over and that's it. But when we seen all these people there and we knew we was going to sit down and eat together, and that just brought a new surge. Some of them wasn't real old. Some of them was 6 months, a year.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you think about your great-grandchildren and your great-great-grandchildren that you have. Is there something that you want those people and future generations of Americans to know about World War II and what all you guys did?
Yes, I don't know how it would work for them to experience the same feeling. I really don't. I hope they don't have to. On the other hand, they might have to something worse. You know, at the end of World War I, that was said, that's it. Won't be anymore. As my dad said, part of his preacher philosophy, he said, where you've got people, you'll have trouble. I think it's always been. I could say if part of them was women, you'd have more trouble.
Now you're trying to cause some trouble. And there is one woman I need to thank, Lori Bird, Jake's granddaughter, for letting me know about him and making sure we recorded his story so the family would have it and so you could enjoy listening along today on Hometown Heroes. Happy birthday, Jake. And again, if you want to see the face behind that folksy voice you've heard for the last hour, hop on Facebook, punch in Hometown Heroes Radio, or just go to hometownheroesradio.com. Out of time for now, I hope you'll join us again next time when we hear from the captain of the 1941 University of North Dakota football team and hear about his PT boat adventures in the Pacific during World War II. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you once more that freedom is not free.